Okay, so our learning today is for the Aliyah Neshama of Chaya Sara Bas Moshe, Rachel Reisel's mother, who passed away on Yud Dalid Tishrei, and she should have an Aliyah Neshama. Rachel Reisel, you wanna say something about your mother for a minute or two?
Sure. I was gonna say I'm not gonna cry, but I think I'm kind of sorry. Still a little bit raw. So first, I just want to quickly say, I know we're rushed. My mom encouraged me to make Aliyah, knowing that she probably wouldn't see much of me, because she knew this is where my heart and soul was. And she gave me her blessing. She was going to move here and come back with me in March, and then Corona hit and couldn't do it. And she wanted to live here and eventually die here. And it came as a shock because she wasn't ill. And but she encouraged me to come the first time in 97 and use my $3,000 tax rebate to come with my kids. She says, you have bills to pay. They're always going to be there. Go. You're going to look back and say, the bills, I paid bills, and now I still haven't gone to Israel. She goes, use your bill money and go to Israel. And when I came the first time, I knew this is where I was going to live. And she was always supportive of me making Aliyah. And so really, I owe that to her, for her encouragement. And she would have been 87 in December, in Tibet. Seven, we were very close. We spoke on Skype at least 3 or 4 times a week. We'd have coffee together and eat food. But she saved a lot of lives. She was always taking in stray people. And I grew up thinking that was a normal. People with odd people would be in our pictures of me and my siblings. And they would, who's that? And I was like, I don't know, that's Todd. He was with us for a month. And she saved my little sister, who is in her 30s. She saved her life, and another brother who passed away. And Gargar, who's from, he's Muslim from Somalia. She saved his life, and he calls her mom and calls us his siblings. And she's saved a lot of people. And I'm gonna miss her, but I wanna do everything for her to have, because I feel like she's here. She's helping the family in a different way. And even though I'm going to miss her, I do miss her. I know she's in a good place and helping all of us.
And she should, like I said, our learning today is for her Aliyah Neshama. One of the first things, or one of the many things I'm sure that you'll do to make sure that her Aliyah, her Neshama ends up in the highest of places. Sounds like she has a good step up already.
Yes. Thank you
very much for telling us about her. Really.
Thank you very much for letting me share about her and elevating her. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So, okay. So, let's speak today about the power of rain. Okay. And in the parsha that we just finished reading, right, it talks actually in two places about the creation of vegetation. Okay. The first time it's mentioned in Perek Aleph, okay, and it describes how everything was created, right? It says that God says, "Let there be vegetation, and they should bring forth plants with seeds, so they continue to grow. Fruit trees that yield fruit, each after its own kind, and with seeds in them." And it was so. It happened. Hashem says. Then it is. Okay, and then it says the earth brought forth vegetation, herbage yielding seed after its kind. Okay, it happened. Hashem says, do it, it happened. Okay, but here's sort of the confusing part. So in the next parak, in Parak Bet, Pasuk Hey, it says, Kol siyach hasadeh terem yeh ba'aretz, v'kol esef hasadeh terem yitzmach. Okay, so it says that every tree of the field, all the growth, all the greenery, was not yet on the earth. And the herbs in the field, the trees, the herbs were not yet on the earth. And it says, because ki lo Himtir Hashem Elokim al ha'aretz, because Hashem had not yet caused rain to fall on their land. Ba'adam ayin la'avod es ha'adamah, because there was no man yet to work the land. Okay, so we see right away, there seems to be a very direct connection between rain and tefillah. It didn't exist because there was nobody to daven for it. As soon as Adam HaRishon davened for it, Adam HaRishon recognized that it was necessary. Right before that, the Rashi says that the plants were like right below the surface of the, right, they were, the roots were formed, the greenery was formed. Everything was right below the surface of the dirt, waiting to put their heads, pop their heads through. And it wasn't until there was rain, and until there was a man to daven for it, only then did it really begin to sprout and to come forth. So as I said, there's a very direct connection between prayer and rain. And actually, we think about that at this time of year. We just began, Shmini Atzeres, we just began saying, Mashiv HaRuach Morid HaGashem. Hashem, you know, causes the rain, the winds to blow, and he brings down the rain. And I want to look at the Mishnah in Tanis, which talks about why, you know, talks about the fact that we're commanded to say that in our tefillah, and hopefully we'll get some understanding about why and what it means. So before I begin the Mishnah, first of all, I want to mention that it's in the Mishnah of Tanis, which you wouldn't think, like, what does rain have to do with fasts? And the reason is that the first three Mishnayos deal with when do you begin talking about rain, but the rest of the Sefer is about fasting. When do you fast? Like, when do you fast, and who fasts when there is no rain? If the rain has not yet fallen, what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? So that's the rest of the Mishnah. Just also another little background fact is that that Sukkot is the time that we're judged for rain, right? In Rosh Hashanah, in Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, it talks about the fact that there's more than one Rosh Hashanah. You know, there's Rosh Hashanah that we just went through and we know about. But there are other times in the year that are designated Rosh Hashanah for different purposes. So, for example, we know Tu B'Shvat is the new year for trees, and we know that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the time when we begin counting. It's the Rosh Hashanah for counting the number of years a king is in office, and then we have Sukkot, which is the time, which is when we are judged for rain. And why do we need to be judged for rain, right? I mean, you know, rain could, I mean, first of all, I mean, okay, it's going to rain, you know, but I mean, is there going to be a lot of rain? Is there going to be a little rain? Is it going to be at the right time? Is, you know, like a farmer plants his seeds, and maybe at that time he needs a lot of rain so that the seeds will rot and eventually do what they're supposed to do, you know, but maybe later on when the plants are flowering and they're waiting to be pollinated, a huge storm of rain would come down and destroy them, and you have a field of mud. We daven so that rain comes in the right amount, at the right time, the way that it's supposed to come. And that judgment happens on Sukkot, on Sukkot. How would you respond to it? The same way that to being judged, the same way that we respond to being judged on Rosh Hashanah, right? We daven, right? That would be the appropriate response for being judged. So then you daven. Okay, so let me get right to the Mishnah. It says, Me'emosai mazkirin gvuras hageshem, geshamim. Okay, so from when do you mention gvuras geshamim, the power of rain? When do you start? So mashiv haruach, in the Mishnah's terms, mashiv haruach morid hageshem is called gvuras hageshem, the power of geshem. Okay, so Rabbi Eliezer says, Yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag. Okay, so he's saying that from the first day of Sukkot. Okay, and they make the connection in the Gemara between, and he says that it's the same time that you take the lulav and esrog, that's the same time that you begin davening for rain, because there's a connection between rain and lulav and esrog, right? It's one of the kavanas of taking a lulav and esrog is that you think that you have to think about the fact that without rain we wouldn't have these objects, we wouldn't have the arbaminim. And so when you're sitting there shaking your lulav and esrog, you're one of the things that you're thinking about is that this is also to bring down a good judgment for rain. So Rabbi Eliezer says, okay, yeah, this is when we should daven. This is when the judgment is coming, so this is when we should daven. Well, then along comes Rabbi Yehoshua, and Rabbi Yehoshua says, what do you mean, Eliezer? Okay, Miyodim Tov Acharon Shel Chad. Nope, from the last day of Chad, which means Shmini Atzeres. Amar lo Rabbi Yehoshua, so Rabbi Yehoshua says to him, Ho'il, Isn't Beshem considered to be a sign of a curse on the Chag, right? Isn't it like a bad thing to get rain on Sukkot? And you know, kind of the fact is, it sort of is, right? The Gemara brings a mashal, and it says that it's sort of like a servant has prepared this delicious drink. And he brings it to his master, and he's so proud of himself, and he presents it to him. And his master takes the drink, and he like throws it in his face. It's like a complete rejection. If it rains on Sukkot, we're putter from the mitzvah of Sukkah. So we're not putter, meaning we don't have the obligation. But it's more like, well, we want to do the mitzvah, and we've worked so hard. You know, we've made our kosher Sukkah, and we've like worried about this. Height and the number, the walls and the schach and everything we want to be perfect. And Hashem basically says, no, I don't want you. I don't want you to serve me in that way. And in that sense, it becomes a klala. It becomes a negative thing. So that's the time that you're going to be asking for rain. That's the position of Rabbi Yehoshua. So Rabbi Eliezer responds, Afani lo amarti lishol. But I didn't say to ask. Okay, I'll explain what that means. Ella lahazkir mashiv haruach umorid hagashem ba'onaso. Rather, I said that we should mention mashiv haruach umorid hagashem and that the rain should come, the winds and the rain should come at the proper time. Okay, so we know that that there are two places in the Siddur that we mention rain. Right, so the first is in the second bracha, where it says, "Atah gibor li'olam Hashem, mechayim meisim atah rav Moshe." So you're all powerful, Hashem. You revive the dead. Okay, and then it says, "Mashiv haruach morin hagashem," and then it says that you make the wind blow and you bring down the rain. So why is this here? Okay, so we'll get to that. But when he says that it's listed again, it's mentioned again in the bracha, the ninth bracha, Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Es Hashanah Hazos. Okay, so bless us this year, culminate to who are some and our crops, the tova, the tain, and then we say tain tal or matar levracha, and we should get dew and rain it for a bracha. Okay, so the Shmoneh Esrei is divided, the weekday Shmoneh Esrei is divided into, there's actually 19 brachos, but the brachos have different, they're in different categories. So the first three brachos are praises of Hashem. The last three brachos are, we thank Hashem. And the middle 13 brachos are where we add in our requests. So Mashiv HaRuach is in this first section of giving praise to Hashem. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's not a dafka request for rain. It's stating a fact, this that Hashem is all powerful. Hashem can enliven the dead. Hashem can do many. He helps, you know, those who are lying in the dirt. He provides what everybody needs. He has this incredible power, and he also brings down rain. And then later on in the section which we have bakasha requests, so there we shoel, that's his language. We're asking for something. And what we're asking for is to receive rain in the proper amount and in the proper time. And that's really where we're davening for to receive rain. And the first time we're praising Hashem because and acknowledging that this is what Hashem does. And then the second time we're making a request. And by the fact that we on Shabbos, so we say the first part, the first bracha, we say Mashiva Ruach, right? In Shabbos, we don't normally make bakashot. We don't request because we have everything that we need. So but during the week, we do make requests. So in the end, the decision, the halakha goes according to Rabbi Yoshua, and we start making this request for rain, or we mention rain. It just wouldn't go that year, even though we're not specifically davening for it, but you do it in its time. So the halakha is according to Rabbi Yehoshua. And actually we don't start saying Tena Matar until, does anybody know, till the 7th of Tishrei, which is, till the 7th of Cheshvan, which is, it's Motzei Shabbos, okay, and Sunday. Motzei Shabbos, next Saturday night is the first time you say Tena Matar in Tefillah, and you start saying it on Sunday morning. And why did they wait a whole 2 weeks after Shmini Atzeres? And that was in order to give the people who were living the farthest away from Yerushalayim time to get home safely so that they wouldn't get wet and they wouldn't be, praying that it not rain, that they get home safely and dryly and, get to their homes before the rain starts. Does it work? Well, it's an interesting thing. The Kohen, one of the things that the Kohen Gadol does when he goes in the Kaddish Kaddishim is that here you have the holiest man in the world is in the holiest place in the world on the holiest day of the year. And one of the things that he does in there is he davens that the prayers of all the wayfarers that it not rain be nullified. Yankel is driving home with his wagon full of, while driving to market with his wagon full of wheat. And he says, please let it not rain, please let it not rain, please. So the Kohen Gadol has to nullify those prayers. In other words, prayer for rain works, an important thing for all of us to think about. Let's just look at this idea of gvura, okay? The power that Hashem the power that Hashem has. It says that there are actually four things, four maftechot, four keys that Hashem keeps to himself, that he doesn't give to other people to do, right? Hashem has agents doing everything, right? There's, you want to call it lachim, angels, you want to call it some kind of power or spirit, but basically it's there are agents that Hashem creates to do all kinds of things, right? There's the leaf falls off the tree, there's a malach that just kind of pushed it off and disconnected it at that moment. Right, there's a worm that goes into an olive. I'm thinking my garden here. There's a malach that kind of pushed it in there and encouraged it to go in there. So these things, that there are many, many millions of things. Somebody needs tzedakah, Hashem puts it in our head to give this person money, or to make a phone call to somebody who needs to hear from another human being. Hashem, we may be Hashem's malachim in a sense, but there's certain things that he keeps to himself. Okay, and so they are, when a child is born, okay, science, doctors, smart people, nobody has ever been able to figure out why exactly a child is born at a particular time. Nobody knows the reason. Hashem exclusively controls that. Okay, parnasa. Okay, I have this great business idea, money is pouring in, but then my refrigerator breaks, and then my car gets into an accident. I have to pay out a lot of money for those things. I'm not ending up with any extra money. I'm not, I may have made more money, but I don't end up with more money in my pocket because I've had to spend the money on other things that I didn't anticipate. So Hashem really controls how much money we have, what our financial situation is for the year. Okay. Tchias HaMeisim. So this idea of the dead becoming alive, I mean, we don't even really understand what that is, but at the right time, Hashem will determine when that will be, and he will cause that to happen. There's no human being who can make that happen. At the right time, Hashem will decide that, you know, people will come alive, and, you know, we wait to see our loved ones once again. The last thing that Hashem controls that I want to mention is, I mean, he really controls everything ultimately, but he does not give himself handles it directly, is rain. And, you know, there are many things that scientists can predict to the exact, right? Like exactly when, I'm always amazed by this, you know, they send a rocket into the sky and they know exactly at what point to, okay, do a burn. And so that it turns and so that it goes into right exactly the angle it's supposed to go into, and it so that it lands in the, you know, all these, they're astronomical, really, calculations, but they somehow can do that. Rain, nobody knows. But even when they say 100% certainty of rain, you know, it could be like a little dribble, you know, four little drops of rain, and, you know, that was your rain for the day. Or it could be this huge, they're predicting a light rain and it becomes this huge storm. There is no way to predict the rain, and only Hashem has that power. So one of the things that we should think about when we're davening for rain, it's a reminder to ourselves. It's a reminder to us that who runs the world? Who's running the world? Who makes the decisions about how much rain there is? Who makes every decision about what happens in your life, all the circumstances and changes in your life? But specifically, just a reminder that Hashem is the one with power and that Hashem runs the world. Okay, we have time for a little story. Okay. Okay. Thank you. So this story takes place, this is one of my favorite stories, actually. This story takes place in a little town called Tzfat in the 16th century. And at that time, the Tzfat was under, all the Middle East was under the control of the Ottoman Empire. And it was poor country. Israel was a very poor country. The majority of Jews lived in Tzfat. It was a large population center. But most of the people were very poor. And one of the poorest was a man named Zachariah, who was, he was a schlepper, basically. Somebody needed some books moved, you know, across town. They would call Zachariah. He would take the books and schlep them across town, schlep it on his back. And, you know, somebody needed a chair brought here. So Zachariah did that. And he spent all of his days, like, running around and, you know, made very little money, did not have a very easy life. But the thing that bothered him more than the fact that, you know, he worked so hard and really profited so little was that he didn't have time to he could barely catch a minion every once in a while. And when he went to the minion, he had a lot of difficulty reading the words. You know, because he was so he still wanted everything to be perfectly correct, so he read everything very slowly and precisely. And he would finish davening, and all the other men would be sitting there with their gemaras and the latest new edition of right off the press by this guy named, you know, the Ari, brand new books, you know, that just came out. And he could barely read it. He could barely understand it, and it hurt him greatly. At one point, he came to the Rav and he said to him, "Am I a good Jew? Am I a good Jew?" And the Rav could see, like, this was a man in pain. This was a man who was suffering from whatever he lacked. And the Rav said, "Listen, the fact that you can't learn Torah and the fact that you have difficulty reading the words quickly, it's not your fault. You know, that's the gift that you've given or not given by Hashem. But to be a good Jew, you have to keep the laws." Okay. And Zachariah said, "Well, but that's the problem. I don't know the laws. What am I supposed to be doing?" So the Rav said, "Okay, so we'll learn together. You and I will sit, I'll go over the laws with you, and you'll know what to do. So they did. The Rav was a man of his word, and they sat, and he taught him everything that he needed to know to live as a Jew. He taught him everything that he needed to know to be in business, and he blessed him that he would be able to earn his living with much less effort. Well, what happened is within a few weeks of that, the water carrier spot quit his job, and Zachariah became the new water carrier. And he immediately went to the Rav and asked him, okay, what am I supposed to do? Like, what are the laws? You know, how am I supposed to handle myself in this new business? And the Rav explained to him all the things. He said, you know, these are the laws that you have to keep, and be an honest man. Do not be deceitful, and you know, do whatever you can to keep these laws. So he did. And for a number of years, he would carry the water on his back, and he would go from place to place, and he would, you know, after a while, he was able to save up enough money that he was able to buy a donkey, and it made his life so much easier. You know, he delivered all of his water and carried it with the donkey. Of course, before going into the business, he spoke to the Rav. You know, what are my obligations to my, you know, what am I supposed to do? What's my obligations to my donkey? You know, like he wanted to know all the proper halachas. All the way that he had to act. And the Rav, of course, gave him a bracha. And the people were very pleased with him because he was an honest person and he is a reliable person. And he came on time and he did everything that he said. And after a while, he had this idea, you know what, maybe I don't have to carry water. I can bring milk. I'll deliver milk to people. And he did that and he made a nice profit. And then after a while, he thought, well, you know, maybe I don't have to carry it at all. I'll just open up a little, you know, I'll get myself a little store and the Chob Yerushalayim and I'm gonna sell my milk there and the people will come to me. Again, went to the Rav, told him what to do, gave him a bracha, and eventually he started selling other things. You know, first he said, okay, cheese and you know, other milk products, and then he added bread and crembos and you know, over time he like had himself like this nice makolit. Each time asking the Rav for his bracha, all the time thinking, all my achievement, everything that I've got comes from Hashem, and it's because I did what the Rav told me to do, and because he gave me his bracha. So he's actually becomes quite a prosperous man. He's no longer, you know, this poor schlepper. He's quite a prosperous man. Well, hard times came to Tzfat, and there was no rain. And the sun, you know, is like drying up all the crops, and you know, the wells are drying out, and you know, people are becoming really like, there's more and more poverty. People are beginning to starve. It's quite a serious situation. And the Rav decrees that there should be a fast day, and he declares this day everybody should come to the Beit Knesset. Everybody should, you know, and we're going to daven, and it's. Everybody's going to fast, and it's going to be like Yom Kippur, and they're all doing that. And then during one of the breaks, a man comes up to the Rav and he says, you know, I don't like to say, but you know, when I was walking here, I don't want to tell you, talk about anybody. When I was coming here, I saw Zachariah like sitting with his family eating like a big meal. And the Rav's like, what, Zachariah? Without taking the time to take off his talus, he rushes over to Zachariah's house. Indeed, there he is, sitting at the table with his family, eating a big meal. And he says, how could you? How could you do this? Zachariah is like, what? You know, is it Tisha B'Av? Is it some other fast day that I didn't know about? And the Rav understands that Zachariah didn't hear about the decree. And he says, yes, we made this a public fast day because there's no rain, because we so desperately need rain. So Zachariah gets up from the table and he walks over to the window and opens it up and looks up at the sky from his window. And he says, Rabbono Shel Olam, I don't know very much. I'm not an educated man. And I'm just a poor schlepper. I just, you know, schlep stuff. Who am I? But I know one thing, and that is that I listen to my Rav. I listen to the Rav. Whatever he tells me to do, I do. Because I trust him, because he's an honest man, because he knows the halakha, And everything that he says to do, I do it. Even if it's hard, even if I have a hard time doing it, I do it. But you, Hashem, you, anything is possible for you. Everything is easy for you. So how come you're not listening to the Rav? The Rav is asking for rain. We desperately need rain. And why aren't you giving the Rav? Why aren't you listening to the Rav like you're supposed to? And before he finishes his prayer, there's a cloud in the sky, and there's a soft rain, and soon there's a heavier rain, and the fields become wet and full of rain, and the wells become filled up. And that is the power of a prayer of a simple Jew. And that is it, and that is all.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So,
very nice.
A few announcements before we go on.
Bravo.